Today on Family Talk.
The mother-daughter relationship can be a source of joy and fulfillment for women, but the father-daughter relationship is no less important. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and we're about to enjoy another classic conversation centering on the theme of the role that dads play in the lives of their children. Today and tomorrow, our theme will be the father-daughter connection, as described in the landmark book called She Calls Me Daddy, 7 Things You Need to Know About Building a Complete Daughter. The author of that book is Robert Wolgemuth, a well-respected author and executive in the literary industry, who just also happens to be one of Dr. Dobson's closest friends. Dr. Wolgemuth wrote She Calls Me Daddy about his relationship with his own daughters, Missy and Julie. When this interview was recorded, dad as well as daughters were in studio together along with their mother, Robert's wife Bobby, who lost a battle with cancer in the fall of 2014. Robert has since remarried. He and his wife, author and ministry leader Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth, make their home in Florida. Here now is Dr. James Dobson to introduce today's conversation with author Robert Wolgemuth on Family Talk.
This is more than just a writing project for you. This really comes out of your heart, doesn't it?
It really does. It comes out of when people have asked me how long it took to write. Sometimes I say 25 years, because that really is the truth. And in fact, actually sitting down at the word processor and committing these ideas to the computer didn't take as long as I thought it would, because it was right out of my own experience. You know that experience, mm-hmm. being there, and it's just a matter of getting it from your heart to the computer, and it rolls pretty quickly. Mm. So it was really a thrilling experience. I had no idea it would be so much fun to write.
Missy and Julie, how do you feel about being the subject of a book in this way? I'm sure you're all through it in so many illustrations.
It was actually really fun. It was very fun for us to read it and to read the stories and to say, I remember that. And then to look at the reasons, you know, the whole book is in principles. And so each chapter is one principle. And to read the story and then relate it to the principle was exciting for us, especially me now as a parent, to say, we know what he was thinking when he did that, and to kind of get under that was really
fun. And understand the why.
Yeah.
And now you've got your own daughter.
Right.
And you're going to translate some of that on down a generation, aren't you?
Well, hopefully.
And I'm sure John has read it.
Yes.
Julie, you have also been very, very close to your parents through the years, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
A lot of your friends have never really understood that closeness. I know at one point in the book you all said that your friends would say, you told your parents that? But you've been very open with them through the years, haven't you?
Even now, my friends don't understand that my parents, especially my dad, is someone that I go to for advice and for wisdom.
Hmm.
And in asking someone for wisdom, you have to be honest with them. You can't just tell them part of the story. Hmm. So,
and you just built a pond in the backyard with your dad, the two of you out there constructing. What was this, Robert?
I got a crazy idea 3 or 4 weeks ago. I was actually clearing an area to put a little patio, and a guy came over to power wash our deck behind the house, and he said, you ought to put a pond in there. And I said, a pond? So we started to look into it, and actually garden ponds are the happening thing these days. You can buy books and magazines and all kinds of things. So we decided to build a pond. So I dug a hole 8 feet by 6 feet and about 3.5 feet deep. And Julie and I got a rock delivery last Friday, 3.5 ton of rock.
I understand you're doing this. I don't understand how you got Julie to do this.
We have really, working together is a big part of our lives. We've done projects from the time you guys were very small. We have a picture of Julie holding a cement block that's about as big as she is. But just for the fun of it.
Another one of our projects.
Another one of our projects.
Now, Bobby is here with us, the mother of these two beautiful girls, and she's going to say a little bit today, but not an awful lot. She hasn't said a word so far, and the reason is because she's having throat problems. But
I'm going to take a lot of credit for these sweet girls, and of course, I've just enjoyed so much.
You're not at all proud of them, are you?
No. Of course I am.
Well, let's get into the content of the book, Robert. You have a bottom line, which, again, we have talked about many times, but there is a theme in this book in raising healthy and responsible and God-fearing daughters, speaking as a father. Mm-hmm. What is that bottom line?
Well, first of all, the most important issue is that raising this daughter cannot be abdicated. It is the dad's responsibility. You can't consign it to the school. You can't consign it to anyone else. So the most important thing that I want a dad to feel is the challenge of this being his responsibility. The other thing that's really important, though, is this is not about inducing guilt. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, many of the things that are in the book are there because of my own error, my own mistakes.
How come the two girls are nodding at this moment?
And I saw that. You learn two different ways. You learn by doing it right and saying, ah, that was right. And you learn by failing and saying, that was wrong, and I don't want to do that again. But again, I don't want this to be a guilt-inducing thing. I want this to be a great encouragement to dads who need instruction. It's like anything else in life. You don't just automatically come up with ideas on how to do things, whether it's flying an airplane or raising a daughter. You need specific help. So it's encouragement. It's responsibility. This is really your responsibility. Don't give it to anyone else. You're the only daddy she'll ever have. You can be a great dad.
Now, you gave a great answer to my question, but it wasn't the right answer.
Oh, okay.
See, I've read the book, see.
That's good.
The two components are you need to be very, very loving.
Yes.
And very, very tough.
The illustration, and in fact, the very first time I heard this was from you. The battery in your car works only because it has a positive and a negative pole. And so your affection, your tenderness, your words of kindness, your touching is the positive. And the discipline is the negative. You have to have all of both. If you have 100% of one and 50% of the other, then you become a permissive dad. Or you become an overbearing, brutish dad on the other side of it. You have to turn both of those up the whole way. That's exactly right. That's a very important thing.
Those two principles have real meaning for me in the scriptures as well. If you look at the teachings of Jesus, it's positive and it's negative. Sin is terribly negative. Jesus said some of the most frightening words that have ever been spoken by a human being. You know, he's talking about the consequences of dying without a remedy, without the salvation that he offered. And yet he offered hope and he offered love. It's the positive balanced with the negative. And in our culture, we tend to think only of the positive, but there is a role. I don't even like to call it negative. There is a role for discipline. And that's what you were trying to emphasize.
It is. And the truth is that part of the problem with exercising that side of it is that you want to be liked by your kids. You want your daughter to always like her daddy. But the truth is, if you exercise your responsibility, there will be times when you will come in dead last in the dad sweepstakes of the year. They don't like what you've done. And really, it's not a bad thing to remind them in the process. This is not about being liked by you. This is about doing the right thing.
Missy and Julie, you now are grown and you're looking back on this loving, tough discipline. How do you see it? How does it look from this perspective?
I see it as something I'm very thankful for because I know that Dad did what was actually the hardest for him and that it wasn't fun for him when he had to discipline us.
Missy, how do you see it?
I think that it gave us security, knowing we had boundaries that we knew. I've been a teacher, and you know in a classroom, if you have a substitute teacher, the teacher is going to be different than you are, and the children tend to kind of lose it because they're used to a certain schedule. And being parented in a way that we were, we knew it was expected of us, period. We'd go to a function, and on the way to wherever we were going, Mom and Dad would say, we are going to so-and-so's house. You're going to see these adults, and we expect whatever behavior. Mm-hmm. So we knew it was expected of us, and I think that gave us security. We knew it was expected of us. I think that security was very important for us growing up.
It was structure.
Missy, somebody told me that you have observed in your role as a teacher So many youngsters who don't have that discipline and that structure and those boundaries and have kind of taken over control of their families, and that this has enlightened you even more about what your parents were trying to
do. It's really amazing. Because just like Daddy was saying, there's a positive and a negative, and if there's so much positive, that child becomes the ruler of the roost. And I would just be amazed at the way that children would talk to their parents, and it was not any big deal. I mean, you could tell that was what was normal. Yeah. And instead of that parent saying, I am the boss, we had a question. We actually had two questions that were asked to us often, and we knew the correct answer. And one of them was, who's the boss? And the answer was, you are. Period. I mean, that was the answer. The other one was,
when do you obey the first time?
Those two.
A tyrant, Bob. All these years.
It wasn't like Sound of Music where I blew the whistle or anything. But those two principles, that he is the boss and we obey the first time, that's the foundation of it. And those the children that I saw that did not have the parent as the boss, they could do whatever.
The goal is to build discipline. And the way of building discipline the noun, the way of building discipline is discipline, the verb. You can exercise to build muscles because the goal is to be strong. So what you do, even when they're small, you play games. This isn't all leaning in on the kids and being ugly. At the dinner table, we would have the no game. And we would say, okay, now tomorrow night, what we want to do is have a report of when you said no to yourself today. It doesn't have to be even a bad thing. Just like, for example, one of the reports would be, I was on the phone with my friend, and I said, I have to be off the phone in 5 minutes. And so I made the decision in 5 minutes that 5 minutes was up. And so I said, I have to hang up now.
Teaching self-control.
Absolutely. And so what you do is you build those muscles so that when it comes time for more important things, then no is something you understand how to work.
Yeah.
You say no to yourself, you make it stick. Nobody else is watching. This is an internal thing. And really, it's very biblical that even in the Garden of Eden, in the midst of perfection, there was a no.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think the Garden of Eden would be a place where there was all yeses. It was perfect, after all. But in the Garden of Eden, there was a no. And that's as positive as any other positive thing could be.
If you look at a magnificent orchestra or a physician who's become a great surgeon, you look at human excellence, discipline is always a key to it.
That's right.
You know, it is always a key. And yet in our culture, we've really lost an awareness of the role that it plays, and we think only of management. It's beyond management. It's self-discipline and self-control. It is respect for another human being. It's in the relationship. It's not just getting a child to do what you want them to do, but it is in building attitudes in the relationship.
And that discipline is a gift not only to the girls. They would say now that the discipline that they have as adults to be able to say no to themselves on something that would probably wreck their schedule that day or that is not good to eat or whatever, is a gift to them. I would say it was a gift to Robert and me, because when the girls were in high school and college, it was a gift to us knowing that they knew how to say no to themselves and we didn't have to worry that they were going to make terrible decisions. And I think that is the goal of the discipline. Sometimes the girls would come to me and would say, Daddy is being a little hard. And usually my response was, you need to go and talk to him about it. If you think he's being too hard, then talk to him, because I didn't want to build a relationship with Missy and Julie where Robert was the adversary. Then when they would talk it out, usually it was resolved. Their relationship was strengthened, and the communication and the conversation was absolutely the most important building block that I feel like Robert gave Missy and Julie.
Boy, you're hitting on a very important principle. The mother is the primary interpreter of the father to the kids, and the father is the primary interpreter of the mother to the kids. And if either of them doesn't do that job properly, then the relationship begins to deteriorate there. So you were supporting what he was trying to do.
And talking, Bobby just said it, and it's also an incredibly important part of this book, that conversation, learning how to talk back and forth, using your tennis ball illustration, where your temptation as a dad is to have your daughter throw a tennis ball to you. She says something about her day at school, And instead of asking a question back, you stick the tennis ball in your pocket because mm-hmm. you have a newspaper to read. But instead, you throw it back, and you're learning how to talk. We had a little rule on the weekend. When I had an errand to run, I never did it alone. I took one of the kids with me. So that we're riding along in the car now, and they're just old enough to be able to see over the top of the mm-hmm. door. And it's hard to come up with conversation with a four-year-old. I mean, really. So what you do is you think of things like, let's count how many buses we pass, or let's count the trucks, or we pass a field and there are cows on the field. Count the cows. So what you're doing is you're learning how to talk to each other. Those, again, are muscles that you build so that when the stakes are much higher, what mm-hmm. you've learned to do is talk. And really talking, again, as Bobby said, talking is like the release valve on a compressor tank that keeps the tank from blowing up. Usually when relationships are destroyed, it's because of what hasn't been said, not what has been mm-hmm. said. And so you learn to come to each other when you're about to blow up, and instead of doing something foolish, you talk about it, and it releases that pressure. But it starts as early as you possibly can start it with just learning how to talk to each other, how to listen, how to respond.
I think most girls talk to their moms. Mm-hmm. They tell their moms everything. They ask their moms for advice, and a lot of times that was the temptation. Not that that's a bad thing, but to completely block out a father-daughter mm-hmm. relationship.
You have to work at it, don't you? It's not quite as
natural. Because it's a lot
easier
for a daughter to relate to her mother because mm-hmm. they are so similar, usually. So I think that was something that was encouraged for Missy and me to talk to Dad, hmm. not just to talk to Mom, especially if there were a problem, if there was something that needed to be said to Dad from mm-hmm. Missy or me.
Would your dad accept it when you came to him and said, I don't think you were fair? That cheerleader trip is important to me, and I think you gave too quick an answer. Would he accept that? I don't mean would he give in. Would he sit down and talk to you about it?
Yes. He wouldn't always give in. Rarely give in. But to give us a...
Daddy definitely valued what we would say and would look at us like he's looking at me right now, not quick to an emotional response. That we're... A woman is much more... I mean, and I am one, so I can say this. Our emotions much more will take over. As soon as we hear something, we may just say something that may not necessarily be the thought-through process. Where Daddy, when we would say something to him... We were talking about this yesterday. If I were to come to Daddy with something I had done wrong and I felt like I needed to confess this, Daddy, I could trust that Daddy would listen to that and think it through and then give me his honest opinion rather than just going emotionally to something.
In fact, in the book, you make the point that you never punish the girls for telling the truth.
Yeah, and this is, as I've talked to friends over the years, this is always a very lively discussion to have with friends where we didn't really say these words to the girls. Bobby and I had this understanding, but what Bobby and I said to each other was, if the girls tell us the truth, there'll be no punishment for what they've done. Now, there may be consequences. Mm-hmm. If you break something, you have to replace it. If you steal something, you have to return it. But what often happens, I think, is that children are secretive and dishonest because they're afraid of the implications or the results of them telling the truth. And what their parents ultimately want is for them to tell the truth. Now, people would say, well, that just gives your kids license. Well, this isn't our idea. This is really a scriptural idea. The Apostle Paul said, why would you go on sinning if you don't have to? In one of the modern translations. That is, our love for him compels us to right living. So that if you have the relationship and telling the truth about something that you've done that's wrong is a very painful thing to disclose mm-hmm. to someone that you love. Mm-hmm. So that has a tremendous implication on your conduct. Hmm. So we did have that rule. If you
knowing
tell us the
truth. Knowing that you're going to tell the truth.
Right.
And that you are not a good liar and that you probably can't fool your parents because it's written all over your face is going to make you think before you do something wrong. You think. When you're in that judgment process, you mm-hmm. think, I'm going to have to tell the truth. I might as well go ahead and mm-hmm. not do what I shouldn't do.
Another reason I really was excited that the girls had the ability to converse with Robert, I felt like the conversation and the ability to communicate with their dad affected greatly their dating relationships, because they are going to be dating boys for a long time, and their marriages. The whole marriage relationship is a woman being able to communicate with a man. Mm. And to help that relationship be built and strengthened gave them a fabulous beginning to a fabulous marriage. And I believe because of the relationship I have with my dad, Robert has often said to me, the relationship you had with your father enabled you to be a trusting wife and an open wife with me. And I think that that relationship was very important for me to see develop with their dad.
There is so much in your book for us to talk about, and the time really got away from us in a big hurry today. Let's just continue and pick up some other points from the book, and then we'll air that next time. Furthermore, we've got a gallery just jammed with people today, and I want to give them an opportunity to come to the microphone and ask some questions as well. Specifically, I'm hoping to talk to you all about the spiritual development of kids and the role that fathers play in that, and also the early years when dads are so busy and how you deal with that. Some other things. We'll get into that next time. Thanks for being with us for today.
We loved it.
Thanks. Thank you.
Valuable insights about dads and their daughters on this edition of Family Talk, as our host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson, was joined in studio by the Wohlgemuth family to discuss the principles that Robert Wohlgemuth outlines in his book, She Calls Me Daddy, 7 Things You Need to Know About Building a Complete Daughter. As we mentioned at the start of the program, this broadcast is somewhat bittersweet as it features Robert Wohlgemuth's daughters, Missy and Julie, as well as their mother, Robert's first wife, Bobby, who passed away in the fall of 2014 after a long and brave battle with cancer. You can definitely hear her influence in the lives of their daughters, along with Robert's, and you'll find a link for that book, She Calls Me Daddy, on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. In addition, be sure to also click on the link for Dr. Dobson's book, Bringing Up Girls, while you're there as well. Again, check out the resources available on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. If this program has touched you, especially if you're a dad or a daughter, be sure to take a look at our Facebook page right now and join the conversation about today's broadcast. Go to facebook.com/drjamesdobson. Keep in mind that we truly appreciate your prayers and ongoing financial support of Family Talk, especially during the summer months. You can make your donation securely online when you go to drjamesdobson.org, or you can make your contribution over the phone when you call toll-free, 877-732-6825. Be sure to join us again next time for the conclusion of our conversation with author Robert Wohlgemuth on the topic of the 7 things you need to know to build a complete daughter. That's on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
You know, I'm told that when I was a very small child, maybe 2 years of age, my family lived in a one-bedroom apartment, and my little bed was located beside the bed of my parents. My father said it was very common during that time for him to awaken at night to a little voice that was whispering, "Daddy, Daddy." My father would answer quietly, "What, Jimmy?" And I would say, "Hold my hand." And my dad would reach across the darkness and grope for my little hand, finally just engulfing it in his own. He said later that the instant he had my hand firmly in his grip, my arm would become limp and my breathing deep and regular. I'd immediately gone back to sleep. You see, I only wanted to know that he was there. Until the day he died, I continued to reach for him, for his assurance, for his guidance, but mostly just to know that he was there. Then, so very quickly, I found myself in my dad's place, and I wanted to be there for my children. Not just a name on their birth certificates, but a strong, warm, and loving presence in their lives. You see, a dad occupies a place in a child's heart that no one else can satisfy. So to all the men out there who are blessed to be called fathers, I urge you to be there for the little ones in your life who call you dad.
Dr. Tim Clinton here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. You like listening on the go, maybe while you're working out or jogging down the street? We've got a special offer for you right now today. Download free the smartphone mobile app for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. It works with iPhones, iPads, Android devices, and best of all, you can get this program delivered to you every day, 24/7, 365. It's a great way to stay connected to Family Talk. And not only our broadcast, but you can join the conversation and our Family Talk Facebook page. Read blogs, watch videos on topics of faith, family, culture, and more. By the way, search for books and digital media in our resource center and a whole lot more. You can't beat free. Go to drjamesdobson.org. Download it today, drjamesdobson.org.